SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999. I can't say it with alacrity. It's still going to take, you know, a few more weeks of practice, but it you know, at least I got it right. And of course, I can't say of course at the website because we're still working on the. On the stream, on getting Brian, you know, Brian's going to be doing some engineering, and the stream, you know, plugged into a computer and then through our website. So that still is in the works. So at the very least, you'll get the archive up very quickly, as we've been doing. And Brian, actually, that was fun. We had, he can't do it this morning, but. The feed on his YouTube page and on the Facebook page, which was pretty cool. That worked out all right. So we'll get that stuff squared away. Only 2 days of live show this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, best of Thanksgiving holiday, one of our favorites, of course, if not our favorite. And we'll be back a week from today. We've got the grand. I will admit the grandchildren factor, yeah, that'd be a good title for a book, the grandchildren factor. They'll be here tomorrow, and they'll be here for. Like 4 or 5 days. So I Tina said to me, "You're not working." It wasn't a question. Are you working Friday? That was not the way it was phrased. It was phrased, "You're not working Friday, are you?" That's the way it was introduced. That kind of said it all. Okay, I get the message. No, I'm not working Friday. In other words. So. Quite a bit, and we've got a pretty fun morning planned, and it does include, it has to obviously include, for those that didn't necessarily see the news, because it seems to have gotten a little bit lost in the crush of, I don't want to call it a Friday, the Friday news cycle or what, however they characterize it. But Friday afternoon, word started to circulate that Bobby Ussery had passed at 88. And Bobby Ussery was on with us, I'm going to say during COVID, because the... during the Triple Crown season, when I was trying to, I'm dancing as fast as I can, as the saying goes, and we tried to manufacture some fun shows during Triple Crown season. There was obviously so little live action to discuss, but we had a number of Triple Crown reminiscences, particularly at that point, if you recall, the way things ground to a halt in the end of March. But for the Triple Crown season, it tried to relive and and bring back as many of the memories from that period as possible, and with as many of the participants. And of course, Ussery's got an interesting Triple Crown history. Proud Clarion's upset win in 67. But most interestingly, the situation that arose later on, and the Dancer's Image controversy, and really in a lot of ways incredibly unfair. Think back to our conversations with Peter Fuller, and that would have given Ussery, not that Ussery wasn't in the middle of a career that would easily make him a Hall of Famer, but back-to-back Derby wins, pretty cool. And he could have won others. I know Ballyache was second, right, in 1960. Anyway, we'll talk about Bobby Ussery. Lucky to have at least two visitors that knew him, that rode against him, that booked mounts for him. John Parada. We'll talk to you. First visit with John since moving to Ireland. So look forward to that. Timely anyway to talk to John. And he was Bobby Ussery's last agent. So looking forward to that. And Tony Black. It turns out just as well that we didn't get to Tony Thursday, because he knew Ussery at the end of his career. Ussery riding, I think, into 75, something like that, 73, 75. And Tony, Tony's got some Bobby Ussery stories. So at least those two, and we'll see. I've got reached out a couple of other directions as well. It'll be an eclectic morning. We'll have some weekend recapping to do, obviously. Norm Cassie is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll get Norm in first. And Norm, with the win in the Chalukyi, and nice win, actually. Nice performance. Hot and sultry. Ricardo Santana Jr. There were some very good maiden winners over the weekend we have to talk about. But Hot and Sultry wins the Chalukyi. We'll talk to Norm. I think I saw a picture where Crew is his groom already at the age of two. It looks like he can handle it, to be honest. And we're going to talk to both Cassies, as it happens. We'll talk to Mark as well in the second hour. And I mentioned, if you were listening carefully, if you were listening last week or after Breeders' Cup, I had mentioned that Mark Cassie and I had a conversation. Was it Friday? Leaving on Friday? I think it was leaving on Friday, and Breeders' Cup. And it had to be. And it came up. I think we were just talking about the scratches and the vet. The obligations and the challenges that the veterinary staff has. And he proceeded to show me a computer program on his phone. and then explain to me about this app and this service out of Europe. It's called Sleip, or Sleip, S-L-E-I-P. And simply done, you videotape the horse on the walk, coming and going, and it gets downloaded to their website and gets computer analyzed, whatever the algorithm is and the visual, whatever the mechanics are internally, and it sends you back a report and a sort of a diagram with red, yellow, and green coding on the limbs. And green, obviously, every limb is hitting well, and yellow, there's a potential problem, and red, a specific problem. And it'll show by the ankle, it'll show by the, you know, by the fetlock, by wherever it happens to be, wherever the horse is not hitting well, and hinting at, you know, some sort of a lameness. So Mark's going to explain this, and I as he's explaining it to me, I got around to asking him about the cost, because I figured the cost had to be, you know, quite a bit, and it wasn't. It was not at all. And it seems like it's something that could really help get out in front of issues. To me, it was fascinating, and I said to Mark, I said, how is this not more widely known? And why is this not getting more attention? So, but apparently it's a big deal for the equestrian world. They use it widely. So we'll hear more about it. So you get two for one, like certs. It's two Cassies in one. Norman first, Mark later. I told you John Parada and Tony Black. John White will look at the action from Del Mar, including that tremendous performance from the Nyquist, that Nysos that Baffert had in the Bob Hope yesterday. And in fact, let me go back and check. I'm curious. It was early, this morning. There was no fig yet, which is not surprising. But let's see if Andy. No, not yet. Andy, I mean, does the. I'm not sure if Andy or Mark Hopkins these days does the Del Mar numbers. But that was some performance. And visually, it passed the eye test. The old eye test. There was a ton of action stake-wise Friday, Saturday, Sunday, New York. That carryover that we touched on with Nick Damaro Friday, if you're listening to the replay just now, actually, that was impossible, and we sort of hinted at that, and it's one of the reasons I did not try anything on Friday. I ran out of racetrack, but when I looked at it, I said, this is ugly as a proposition to hit the pick six. So sure enough, double pick six carryover into Saturday, and from there, it actually turned out quite straightforward. It didn't feel like it had to be. And that's one of the real tricks when it comes to pick sixes. That's one of the real battles when you're especially a double carryover. You think, oh, you know, things are up in the air. What they really weren't, and I there was a point I thought I was in decent shape. I was kind of working my way through. I singled Danzig with the stars, making the first start. You know, Rick Dutrow's got everything just humming. And Danzig with the stars, who has always been a nice enough type. And in fact, a horse that, for those of you that play along during the summer at Saratoga, when I'm doing the DePaulo Chevrolet, Danzig with the Stars, I scored with last year, and tried him again this year. I mean, he's always a square price. He's always like the fourth or fifth choice, and you know, and you know, not a big winner per se, but a horse that, you know, turns in nice performances, and you know, he's had a couple of months in the Dutrow barn, and you know, he felt to me like, you know, if he ran his usual race and with any improvement, he could break through, and that's exactly what you got. And I ended up singling him, and so I thought, oh, you know, this is very I thought this was pretty auspicious, but it kind of went sideways. Waskisu too, and the maiden breaker, that made sense, but then came the ninth and the tenth, and that was it. George Duarte, who we may talk to, I reached out to George, haven't talked to him in ages, and Dylan Davis, they win. Actually, they didn't just win, they repeated. How about that? They repeated in that turf championship, same exact way, went to the front wire to wire, exact same way as last year. And how about the Kirby horse that came up from Maryland, Boats Are Rockin', ran very well to be second and lit the board up 44-1 to be second in there. But nothing better. And, you know, you looked at the numbers, then he was competitive, but I was looking elsewhere. Thin White Duke was really didn't put in his rally. Allegon, the Ned Allard really didn't, you know, kind of meekly rallied. And it's not like, you know, it's not like Nothing Better didn't set a, you know, a real pace. So anyway, that was it. Then I thought to myself, okay, we're in good shape. Maybe we'll get 5 of 6. No 5 of 6 for you. No console for you. You're a bad man. Proudfoot. Dutrow again. Yeah. And you know, Proudfoot, he could have won. He was one of the ones. But I tried Spun Special at a price, and Icy Reply, she's awesome. Shaman Princess, no good. So for those of you that negotiated, $4,175. $41.75, not so terrible. And in fact, Andy put up the, I don't know if you saw this, Andy put up the parlay. I think the parlay was just about a little bit more than half, $2,400. So this was eminently hittable, and that came back pretty good. We'll get to some of the other stakes and some of the maiden performances. There were some maiden breakers and more. We'll get to that. But coming up on 20, so let me, and Friday too, a couple of performances. But I'll put this aside so we can get Norm Cassie in here and get the morning started. There's also news as we go to Kentucky. Saw this morning, and I sent him a text congratulating Tony Callow. The way they go. Tony Callow is going to take the mic at Turfway Park. Yeah? Starts Wednesday. Not this Wednesday. Next Wednesday. And season actually coincides perfectly for Tony with his assignment at Finger Lakes. He's been there 15 years, which it seems impossible that he's been there 15 years. I was kind of shocked that it's that long. Anyway, Tony Kahlo, who I think calls a great race. He will be he's a nice addition. Jimmy McInerney has done a fine job. Jimmy continues as a jock agent. I suppose he'll continue to call at Ellis. So, yeah, Tony Kahlo. You didn't see that. Okay, Tony's asking me a question, so that's why I'm slow to react here. All right, let me find Norman. There we go. There's Norman. All right. Norm Cassie will be first or next, however you want to characterize it. And looking forward to congratulating Norm on on another stake win. He joins us now. He's been like a deadly assassin all year long. And when he sends him over, he's taking no prisoners. Norm Cassie, congratulations.
This morning.
No, my pleasure, and always fun. And boy, the Cassie family has a history of everybody pitching in and taking on responsibilities. I'm just surprised the crew is grooming horses at such a young age.
Well, you got to start somewhere, don't you? Feel like honestly, we feel like with my two sons that they will have the ability to, be the very best at this if that's what they choose to do. So we're going to start bringing them around at an early age and see how much they like it.
I saw him with the smock on, and I thought, well, it won't be long now.
I thought that was a hilarious picture. That will definitely be a framer, and it'll be up in the house for a long time.
I love it. How is the baby?
Everybody's doing really well. It's an exciting time. It's the holidays are around. Everybody's getting excited about that. I'd hate to admit it, but we put up our Christmas tree yesterday afternoon, and crew thought that was just the coolest thing. So it's just an exciting time around the house.
I love it, and exciting getting to be a transitional time around the racetrack as well as things get ready to, you can see the end in sight at Churchill and the winter months ahead. We'll talk about that after we talk about hot and sultry coming back in here wire to wire. And as Jay Privman famously says, went to the front and improved her position.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, we had some issues that we had to clean up after the Derby City misstep. She obviously had some time and a bit of freshening. When she came back from the farm, Becky Maker's farm, it was pretty apparent that she was even as good as she was in the spring. She was even better. She was working extremely well. This was not, just full disclosure, it was not the race that we wanted to run in. We were shooting for an allowance race. Just felt like as good as she was doing, still very, very hard to bring a horse back at that one turn mile distance, especially a filly like her who's so aggressive. So that was not the plan. And fortunately, it's one of those deals where sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And we were forced to be there on the Saturday. And I think if you go back and look at her form from the rest of the year, Saturday's race was a little bit of class relief, to be honest. She's been running against some of the best fillies in the country. She kind of stamped herself as being one of those in her own right on Saturday night.
Well, and what's interesting is the versatility, because I mean, she had when Steve Asmussen had this filly. She's a Spitzer, was a pricey Spitzer at Keeneland September 20. She's 4 years old, and this is for the Leblancs for Alex and Joanne, and had won a couple of times early on in the career, wire to wire. But then subsequently, she hadn't done that. And in fact, the last time she tried it was going two turns in the Apple Blossom. Talk about, that aspect. And of course, Ricardo Santana Jr. had actually ridden her in her maiden breaker.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think she's extremely versatile filly. I mean, I still don't know if we know exactly what she's best at. She's obviously fast enough to be a sprinter. I think she has a high cruising speed, and I think, had it not been Clairiere and Secret Oath and the Apple Blossom, things could turn out differently for her in her two-turn races. I mean, she literally got beat by some of the best fillies that were running last year at a route of the ground anyway. So it's hard for us to kind of pinpoint what we're going to do next. We're going to let her dictate what's going on. Personally, I think the thing that's most encouraging, and I don't think you necessarily saw it on Saturday night, is I do feel like she is becoming more kind and easier to manage, so to speak. She's typically very, very aggressive, and that's not necessarily a good thing all the time. We just took advantage of the way that the race kind of played out. I thought Ricardo rode the horse brilliantly. She obviously set fast fractions, but I feel like if you're going to do that on the turn, it's instead of waiting and kind of letting everybody else catch up to you when you already have been given a head start, you kind of kick away even more. And he allowed her to do that on the far turn. And I like the way that he did that. Ricardo seems to get along with her really well. And hopefully that's a partnership that can continue.
She'd been away since May. That's another aspect of this that, that folds in. And, in retrospect, the one turn mile, probably a nice hybrid scenario for her. Had won at the configuration at Churchill when she won that allowance. And she has, it's interesting, she won going a mile off of a very similar kind of a break last year, as it happens, as a three-year-old. Breaks the maiden in January, comes back 6 months later, and wins a one-turn mile off that same kind of layoff. I hadn't really noticed that until now.
I think at the end of the day, Steve, it's just that she's super talented. I think that she can do things that most horses. She kind of defies conventional wisdom, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, I've already alluded to it earlier today or earlier on. This was not what I planned on happening. But at the same time, that's kind of using your knowledge from 99% of the horses that you typically train. It doesn't work. Well, it works with a horse like Hot and Sultry just because she is immensely talented. So you kind of got to throw the rule book out with her. Problem is, and I agree with you, I think 7/8 to to a one turn mile is probably her ideal distance, but there's not too many racetracks that have that configuration, especially during the winter. So, what do we do going forward with her? I think realistically she goes to Oakland. That's where the Leblancs like to be put based, and that's why they actually ended up sending me horses to begin with, because I started going to Oakland. I just feel like that filly and mare distaff division is probably wide open right now. A lot of the good ones retired, and maybe she could take advantage of that.
Yeah, exactly. As the season goes, it's perfect. This is actually timing wise, it's a perfect way to get started. She'll be a mare in 5 weeks, and you got whatever option you want. If you're going to go down the Apple Blossom route again, or if the sprinting is the thing, so be it.
Yeah, no, we got options, and we're going to let her dictate. But right now we're just super excited to have her back, and obviously very excited to see that she's not only did she come back well, but she came back probably better than ever.
Well, hot and sultry. She's a Spitzer. She's out of the Medaglia d'Oro mare, Hot Water, and who herself, I believe, was a stakes mare that rings a bell somewhat. I'll be checking on that here presently. As as we say, Hot Water, there she is. Confirm as we use the fabulous American Produce records. Yeah, this she's very, very productive. This is the dam of Hot Beach as well. The, you know, the two-year-old Omaha Beach, one of the early ones. She had Tracksmith going back a few years, the Street Sense. Tortuga and Scalding. This has been a very productive mare.
She's a very, very good mare.
Yeah. Out of Elusive Heat herself, and now, which explains a few things, because as a daughter of Spitzer, for her to fetch that kind of price, there had to be $475,000 as a yearling, not as a 2 year old. So very nice.
Steve, I got to give credit where credit's due. Alex and Bo Hunt pick out some of the nicest and fastest horses I've ever been around. And so, they go out and pick out their own horses. Bo Hunt helps Alex do it. And if you would see Hot and Sultry in person, you'd understand why they spent the money on it. They probably didn't look at the pedigree nearly as much as you would think. They just looked at her, and she looks like a racehorse. So I think that has a lot more to do with it. Obviously, the mare is great. Hot and Sultry, in her own right, is just an honest horse. I just feel like it's so nice to lead a filly over there knowing she's going to run for you, because sometimes they can be flighty or whatever, and if things don't go their way, they don't necessarily run the way you expect them to. But with this filly, she's just got that type of temperament where, like, you lead her over there, you know she's gonna perform for you, and that probably comes from the mare.
And, I mentioned Elusive Heat. Of course, this is, you go back three dams and there's Extra Heat herself. This is a grade three. So this is a big win. She's already grade one placed, of course, from the Apple Blossom. And she continues to enhance her value. Nicely done, Norm Cassie. Let's touch on what else is going on. As I mentioned, you've really been selective. You've obviously surpassed your earnings mark. It's your best year now. What, 5 years into the training career, and you've had the most wins, 43 wins on the year. So every win is going to be a new mark. Talk a little bit about the year and how you're positioned, heading into 2024.
I'm just very proud of the year that we've had. I don't know if selective is the best way to describe it. I still have very limited numbers, Steve. I'll be honest. It's not like, as well as we've been doing, it's not like we've been generating a ton of new business. So it's not like I have, like, an arsenal of horses at my disposal or whatever. We're still sitting at about 45, 50 horses at a time, which is a good number. I'm certainly not anything to laugh at or whatever, but it's just not necessarily generating the business that we would have liked to at this point, and hopefully that's coming. But I just feel like we're realistic where we spot our horses. Obviously feel very confident with our program and what we do with the horses. When we do lead a horse over, we know the horse is primed to run a big race. And I really feel like the difference between being a 12-15% trainer to the 20-22% trainer is spotting the horses and trying to figure out where the horses belong, maybe one or two races before the next guy does. And we've been really good at doing that. So I think that's the big difference. As far as going forward, we'll be based at Oaklawn and Fairgrounds again, just like we did last year. Really like that system. Send the horses that can't miss much training in case the weather's bad. Those horses go to the fairgrounds, and then the horses that are just basically primed and ready to run, they go to Oaklawn. If we have a couple bad days of winter weather, it's okay. But hopefully going forward, we'll get some more clients, get some new horses, and really start taking advantage of, you know, Kentucky, which is my home. And we're really proud of what Churchill Downs is doing. We just want to continue to support them as much as we possibly can.
Well, you mentioned the placements, and I saw Johnny's Fireball ran the other day as well. And I was at Saturday, second. I mean, always seems to be acquitting himself well. And you know, you're taking advantage of allowance spots with him. I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? He there's a horse that is just accruing earnings. Has made almost $200,000 this year.
We're very, very realistic. Like Johnny Fire was probably one of the first things that we did this year. So we claimed him for 50. He was eligible for a 2X. We came back at Ellis. Instead of running him in the 2X, you know, for the 2X condition, we ran him for the claiming price, snuck him in, won that race. Because he was in for the claiming price, he's still eligible for the allowance condition next time. He comes back and wins that race again. So we just, you know, especially with the claimers, I just feel like we're really diligent with what we do with the horses. It has a lot more to do with the way that we spot the horses than anything else. Just really, really feel like we've kind of got a good handle on those type of horses.
Well, I mean, I could bring up others, including the horse that we absolutely crushed with at Saratoga. I know that got claimed, right? Bear Oak.
Yeah, and Bear Oak is a perfect example too. Like, here he is. We kind of anticipated that the race would come off the grass. It did. We put him in a race that he was no longer eligible for, but we put him in for a high price, claiming $100,000. Justin Nicholson, who I'll give him a ton of credit. He's the one who picks out the claiming horses for us. He's very, very smart, very diligent. He's got a good handle on the horses, where they belong, and you know, if we need to make a surface switch or whatever, he claimed the horse for 50. Turn around, how many races did we win with him? Four.
Yeah,
won four races with him, and then he gets claimed for $100,000.
Yep. How do you beat that?
You can make money.
Yep.
If you do things the right way, you can make money, especially with the claimed horses, and I think we've kind of proven that.
Well, from claiming horses, and of course Bear Oak on Travers Day was a bonanza for players, and then we go to, you know, the maiden, the high-priced maiden opportunities in Kentucky. You've had a few interesting ones that we'd like to catch up on. How about Lookster that won, 2 weeks ago?
Lookster's doing really well. She's in on Saturday. She got a perfect post position. It's a good allowance race. Brad's got two really nice fillies in there as well for good connections, but I feel like Lookster is doing extremely well. Her first race was just a complete throwout. She got left at the gate, ran real spotty, ran up on heels and things like that. Just had a terrible trip. I feel like the race where she broke her mains definitely shows off much more what she's capable of. She's got a high cruising speed. I really wish the race was two turns, because I feel like going forward, that's what she's going to do best. But we'll take this one turn allowance race with her, and we'll go forward from there. But I'm excited to see her run on Saturday, because she's really worked well since she broke her maiden.
Well, and this is a hard spun filly that came out of Timonium, right? Yeah, $185,000 for Bat Masterson, bred by Ten Lane. And out of a Malibu Moon mare, and feels like, you know, that was a, you know, the necessary step forward. And, you know, once again, you're not throwing her into the Pocahontas, or, you know, trying to tilt windmills right away.
No, I have too many friends that I respect that will not allow me to do things like that, including my wife. I have a lot of people that I have to answer to when I make bonehead decisions. So we just limit those decisions when we can.
That's so great. There you go. Yeah, that's true. There's advantages of being of having nothing but you know, racetrack family members, and then there's a few sidebars that that are a little bit more difficult to manage. Pretty funny. I should catch up. We should catch up, actually, on rhyme schemes, too, who, you know, unfortunately, you had to back off. Give everybody an update that's tracking rhyme schemes.
He's doing extremely well at the farm. He should be back first week of January. He's going to be hard-pressed to make the classics. I'm sure that's what everybody would be most interested in. But that's okay. I feel like he still has the potential to be a superstar. The prognosis for everything is very, very good and excellent. And, obviously his performance on the racetrack speaks volumes. And hopefully he comes back just as good, if not better. And then we'll have a whole lot of fun with him during the summer and the fall.
Well, nice. All right. Well, I wish that news was more, the more positive in terms of timing as a three-year-old. I tell you, we can talk about a colt, though, for the Lieblongs that might be operating a little bit under the radar. What's next for Mo Fight?
Mo Fight had some issues that had to be cleaned up as well. And I really, as funny, Steve, that you bring it up, just, you know, and we can make light of these things because that's just the way that the horse racing industry is and how tough the game is. And I don't think people appreciate it that much that are on the outside. As good as the year's been, we've had a lot of setbacks. So, like, I have so many nice horses that are now on the shelf that are coming back next spring that are super talented. Rhyme Schemes, Mo Fight, Empire Island, those type of horses that probably could have made it, and we could have pressed on with them, and you know, ultimately they probably wouldn't have performed as well as they could, but we did the right things with them in hopes of bringing them back and performing at a higher level, because we took care of them and they reward us for us, kind of like I did with Hot Soldiery. So they'll be back in the spring. Mo Fight, I think, if he comes back the right way, could end up being the best horse I have. So he always kind of promoted himself that way. He just he had some minor things that had to be cleaned up, and he should come back really, really strong for us.
I hope that's the case. This is a notable family. The Dam. It's funny. The Dam pretty much has an empty page. However, the Dam was herself out of Juan Desta, who was a fabulous Judmont mare that fits my bill as a horse the time forgot. Juan Desta was really good for Bobby Frankel, and she's the second Dam. I'm looking at this pedigree. Mo Fight, a Uncle Mo for the Lieblongs that broke the maiden at Keeneland, and obviously, or Churchill, in September. And that's put that on the list off of Norm's suggestion. How about the big filly? How about Southlawn?
Actually, Robert sold her at Keeneland. He got $600,000 for her. I'm not exactly sure who ended up with her. She was completely sound. I just thought that was the best move financially for Robert at the time. So we wish the new connections good luck.
Interesting. All right. And I